Welcome to Category Leaders, where we go inside the minds of executives and innovators shaping the future of B2B growth. I'm Eli Grisserfidi, co-founder of Maya Digital, where we help B2B companies and executives build LinkedIn authority and drive life-changing opportunities. On this podcast, I sit down with founders, CEOs, and C-level leaders who are redefining their categories, the innovators turning executive presence into pipeline growth, competitive advantage, and market leadership. If you are a decision maker looking to scale your influence, attract top talent, and position yourself as the go-to voice in your industry, you are in the right place. Let's dive in. Hello and welcome to Category Leaders. Today I'm joined by Ashley Hurd, the founder of Manager Method, the co-host of HR Besties podcast, a LinkedIn top voice, and author of the new book, The Manager Method. Ashley's been a general counsel, head of HR, worked at McKinsey and Yum Brands, and now trains thousands of managers at companies around the world. She's built a community of over 400,000 professionals, and I'm excited to have you here with us today. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Eli. I'm so glad to be here, and thanks to all those tuning in to listen.
Yeah, it's going to be a great conversation. Let's talk a little bit about your career path. You've called it a career quilt. You've worked at corporate sales, law school, general counsel, head of HR, really all over. Some may call it random, but you've said that every part of it has, you know, been part of the quilt. Could you talk more about also the moment you realized you needed your own thing and to start Manager Method?
Yeah, I definitely had a moment where I realized that. And there were a lot of moments before that that were doubt and, you know, random. What am I doing with my life? Sometimes you have family that asks you that as well, or friends or interviewers. But it's this idea that a lot of times we look at our LinkedIn, our resume, and we think, oh, do things really make sense? But it's a reframing to think of who you are now and all of those experiences that led to it. I found that because sometimes the more successful, meaning title or what other people would think of as like really successful, like positions at McKinsey. I had, I'd spent a career in professional environment in as a lawyer, in HR, and I had moved from being a lawyer on the global people team for McKinsey to asking to be interviewed and getting the job as head of HR North America for McKinsey. You know, again, on paper, on LinkedIn, a job I certainly didn't feel qualified for. I did not have an Ivy League degree, so I had all the imposter syndrome. But what I also realized is when I thought about it, I still felt like I had a lot more in common going way back to the days when I was a sandwich artist at Subway. That was my first job. Or I worked at Kmart. And I saw both from those experiences or when I was a lawyer at Yum Brands, KFC, and these restaurant managers that had a skill that sometimes surpassed that from a leadership perspective of senior partners at McKinsey. You know, not always, were certainly incredible leaders in all environments, but I just saw there's so many challenges in management. There are conversations that I saw as an employee or I had as a lawyer in HR. And so what I decided is I had this little spark inside of me of always wanting to do something a little different. And it was when I got this, you know, the biggest job of my career that I decided to really blend my career quilt together and start a company, Manager Method, to help managers at all levels, aspiring leaders to senior executives across industry, to help them, you know some of the legal things that you really need to know that plenty do not, but also, as I say, how to drive business performance without driving people out the door. And so everything that I now do is really a culmination of those squares that seemed random, but it's to help managers, you know, want to be leaders and have real ripple effects on business performance, but also the lives of their team members in a positive way.
Nice. I want to dig in more into that point, that correlation you made between the McKinsey, you know, partner to KFC restaurant or another, or Subway, and them having more common than most. You know, in the end, I agree with you that the challenges are universal, whether, you know, it's a title, a different environment from there. Typically, what you would see happen is either, we see it a lot with executives, you know, either being gripping too tightly or just not even being felt at all and just kind of being loose. You have a really interesting analogy to that. Can you talk about it more?
Yes. So gripping tightly, one thing that might bring that to mind is what I call tight jeans or tight jeans managers. So especially if anyone happens to be listening, hit and play on the podcast when you've just had a big meal, putting on a pair of tight jeans, it's not so comfortable. But that's what it can feel like, including working, with a direct manager through senior executives for those leaders that do want to have a grip on everything. And, that's what people may call a micromanager. What that looks like in practice is that leader that says, okay, well, send me every email to review before it goes out, have me join your meetings, do it exactly like this. And it just feels super restrictive. On the flip side, that you don't always realize is I actually see that generally coming from a good intent, meaning it's people that, whether they're brand new to management or experienced, they were promoted because they were good at their job. And so their idea is, okay, well, I'm going to do this. I know the way to be successful. I don't want to waste anybody's time. I don't want to waste my time. I don't want my team to look ridiculous. I don't want to be embarrassed. So I will tell people exactly what to do. And so you're trying to be efficient, drive results, but often what that can do is create this container that's super restrictive. But on the flip, sometimes, especially those promoted to management, they look around and think, okay, what kind of manager do I want to be? I want to be a great manager. Oh, I had this boss that they were always on me. So I'm going to be the opposite of that. I call this oversized sweatpants. And what I mean is that exactly that, like oftentimes that reaction against a really restrictive management style. But sometimes what that looks like is, okay, I'm not going to have one-on-ones. Come find me if you need me. I'm here for you. I trust you. And that can feel really freeing to deliver that message because you are trying to create freedom. You make decisions, you've got this. But what you don't always realize is, most people do not like the tight jeans style. Sometimes people want a day and, like, okay, just tell me what's going on. But generally, people want some freedom, some autonomy. But when you give people too much of it, meaning they don't have direction, they don't know what's expected. Like they're doing a thing, but they have no idea if they're doing a good or bad job, or they try to come find you as you've invited them to, and they can't get your attention. And now you're stressed as a manager because you have all these people asking you random questions because you didn't set up things like one-on-ones. And so what I recommend isn't just telling people what not to do, but in the middle, I call it cozy joggers leadership, and not just comfy, but structured autonomy. So at any point, does your team know what's expected? Do they know when they can get your support? That's why I do encourage things like one-on-one time, which can look different. Sometimes that's sitting down for 30 minutes. Sometimes it's a couple minutes before, after, or during a shift. But this idea of helping your team make decisions and know where they are and really finding that middle ground.
I think that's so important, the one-on-one point. I have a team of 10 and I make it a point. We interact all the time, but I make it a point for at least once a month, and they all know that we have that one-on-one time together. Not necessarily with an agenda. Sometimes it can be more structured. Sometimes it's just letting them talk about the things that they need to. Everyone has different things from their lives and work and outside of work. So I think that's really important. Do you find that there is a, how does a an executive or a leader effectively understands what style the other his employees or that his organization would work or how they expect it to be? How do you see they usually go about that?
Well, the way I usually see them go about it is just following through with their style or doing what they think should happen and not thinking about their style. That's why in the book I talk about a three-part framework called pause, consider, act. And this is this idea of exactly that. Take a pause. As a leader, sometimes I'll have people say, okay, I heard you talk about this. How do I know if I'm a tight jeans manager? And I say, just think about some of the things you've asked of your teams. Ideally, having a conversation with your team members. That can be a really hard step for you as a leader to ask someone, okay, tell me if you think I'm too restrictive or if you have no idea what's expected. Like that can be awkward. I give tips on how to do that, but think about it but also from the perspective of your team members. If you've been cruising along in your leadership style, all of a sudden your boss comes to you and says, what do you think about my leadership style? I mean, that is a pretty red carpet invitation to tell them exactly what you think they want to hear because your question is, okay, why? And so a big part of that is explaining the why. I mean, literally, even if it's, I was listening to Eli's podcast, he and Ashley at the Manager Method, like and subscribe. We're talking about leadership styles. And they had this analogy of like tight jeans leaders or oversized sweatpants. And I thought it was kind of funny, but then I thought, okay, am I like that? Like, let's talk about that and not just my style, but what you need. Because what you asked in that question is such a great one. which is a recognition that team members need different things. I mean, I say one-on-one time, I do find it across the board incredibly important to give people predicted time. You will have team members that come in with a list of 75 questions that part of your goal is going to be, okay, how can we cut that down to like 74, 73? You know, get you more confident in the moment. You have team members that come in, they've done nothing. They're kind of rolling their eyes, one-on-ones. Okay, that feels like something I should have at 22 and never again. And so it is adjusting and understanding styles and how you use those. But what I call the pause, consider, act approach is to pause, to consider the perspective of your team members, of the people you're working with, and then act accordingly, to do things like setting up time, thinking of how you adjust some of those times based on the needs and the goals of your team members as well.
Yeah, I love it. I'm hearing so far the importance of aligning expectations and really, the top bottom and not necessarily waiting for them to bring it up, but having these conversations and communicating. It may not be an easy conversation. We can also take that to feedback, but also just understanding how each person reacts or communicates or would prefer to have these things. That it's a conversation that everyone should be having if he's managing. So I hope anyone listening to this is already thinking about how he's going to have these conversations going forward. Ashley, tell me about, I know you've had some moments in your personal life throughout your career that, have also fundamentally changed how you think about management. People always have, personal things, sometimes positive, sometimes difficult. How should leaders be thinking about and taking these invisible moments into consideration?
I love this question because so often as a leader, I mean, probably in part because your boss, even if you're a CEO, your boss is shareholders, board of directors, everybody has somebody or people that they report to. And so often you take that by thinking about your team as spreadsheets, as, as not as individuals so much. And sometimes it's a defense mechanism because you feel like if you start to open up and think about people as humans, you are going to invite in a one-on-one with 75 questions about people's personal gripes and problems and take everything on. But it is really important to recognize that how people feel at work and about work, even at a baseline, separate the caring about people as humans, that impacts the work they do, how long they want to stay. And humans, real humans at work, have real human moments. So I say, I can't remember if I talked about this in the book, but so I was 23 years old, and before I went to law school, I worked for 2 years doing sales, like pretty cold calling sales, cold calling chief financial officers, which was a great way to thicken my skin. But in that role, I was at work on a Friday when I got the call that my mother had been diagnosed with leukemia. She ended up going in the hospital for months. She recovered and has a great story. She went on and went to law school, ran her first marathon, is doing great to this day. But what I remember in that is a couple things. One was a coworker, Josh Meyer. He sat next to me, came over and just gave the biggest hug. I mean, I'll start tearing up a bit. Just like knew I was in that moment. And I felt so embarrassed. Like I felt a lot of emotions, but then on top of it, embarrassed when I realized I'm crying at work. Like, oh, this is like so awkward, and just was absolutely there for me, hardly without saying much of a word. But I will never forget that. I also had bosses that had said, okay, do what you need. Take time. Go be with her. We will check in next week. So not do what you need, and then 3 weeks later, they're like, "What? What's happening with Ashley?" Like, we'll check in next week. We'll keep on touch of things. Especially in the U.S., there's not as much protected leave or things like that, and so it wasn't an obligation. They just sent to do it, and it was those levels of care that ultimately, I mean, that did impact, how the person I was at work. I cared more about my job, and not just because someone with a manager title cared about me, but even colleagues. You have such an impact on people's lives. And so for managers, one of the lessons that I teach is your people will have some of the best moments of their life. Like, you may have team members, their kids get engaged. They have grandchildren. You have team members that they come to work, and they maybe have a baby shower for someone. You also have team members that they are so happy in every aspect of their life, but they're afraid to share that at work because they're worried you're okay. I'm going to have a grandchild. Okay, is my manager going to ask me, oh, are you going to have to babysit the grandchild? Like, what's that going to mean for work? So just knowing as you create that kind of cozy joggers mentality is also an environment where people feel like they can do things. Also, people's hardest moments. It's illness is a big one, grief, bereavement. Sometimes it's a work challenge. Someone just messes up something at work. How you act in those moments, in the worst of times, can absolutely impact the best that ultimately that you can bring out of people. And that's one of the traits I've really seen managers bring. You don't have to become a therapist. People don't need their boss to be that, but just knowing, being there in some really basic human ways can make all the difference in the world and in their work as well.
That's so powerful, and I'm so aligned and happy that you brought it up. And thank you for sharing. It is really, I've celebrated. I've been at employees' weddings. I've unfortunately been at employees' family members' funerals as well. So the high and the lows, and really understanding. My co-founder says it a lot. He looks at it as life-work balance. That first there's life, and then there's work, and really being able to have that understanding and empathy. We see it day to day. Like, I'm proud to say that our employees that are with us. We have an average retention of, I think, probably 3 years now. Some are already, closer to four. And those small things, if I look at myself as, as a manager and the CEO, and why people are staying with us, it's those small things. It's really, maybe it doesn't seem as impactful, and it may just be a phone call, or it may just be, I'm here for you, or is there anything that you need? And just being that human, really just pays dividends on a personal level and on a professional level for really months and years to come.
Yeah, I could not agree more.
So we'll shift to some. You spoke about, maybe people not sharing, things that they're going, what's going on. We can talk about that also in the AI sense. I think a lot of companies today are talking about, CEOs putting out press releases that they're AI native and it's fully integrated. But really, with employees, it may be a little bit different. Some of them are not sure if they can share how they're using it out of fear that maybe they'll be replaced or redundant. What do you actually see happening behind all these statements and companies?
I definitely see a disconnect between the press releases people are putting out that have that jargon in the expectation and understanding of what the people that you're expecting to actually, be AI enabled to actually do. It makes me laugh because, I first, as I came up with the idea for manager method, I mean, it was years ago. This was almost 10 years ago. And I started putting a deck together. Of an investor deck. Now, mind you, I've never taken on money, nothing like this. I have no idea what I'm doing. I was a lawyer and an HR. I think I just watched a lot of Shark Tank and got this idea, made these projections of income. But I had this deck, and my husband, who a year ago joined Manager Method as well, but he laughed because I had on this slide Slack enabled, because it was this idea. The whole idea was a company to help managers have difficult conversations. And I wrote Slack enabled to this day. Like, it's like we use Slack at work, but he'll be like, okay, he's like, did you get my Slack enabled? I'm like, okay, listen, but I laugh. But what you said is you're seeing that all the time now, AI enabled. And I know that behind that, there are CEOs. You're wanting to project this idea of we have technology. We have to say that because everyone else is. But you at the CEO level may have no idea necessarily of what that looks like for your team, but even importantly, your teams don't. And so the biggest disconnect I see is the people that you're expecting to use the AI. Do they understand three things? And often the answer is no. What's expected? So what tools are people really expected to be using? What's allowed? So, okay, what's permissible? And then what's possible down the road? One of the ways I find it really helpful is to have a two-way conversation, because often the conversation around AI internally is, well, externally it's we're using it to drive innovation. Internally, it's more tight jeans. It's more, okay, well, our legal, and having been a lawyer, I get it. Like, they're like, don't ever put anything in AI. Like, be super cautious, and that is really important. But there isn't the then proactive conversation, because some of the best innovators around AI are probably doing it. Maybe they're doing it with their work, that your confidential information may already be in there, but you have team members that have really incredible ways to use AI, but they haven't raised their hand because, one, they don't know how to do it. They don't know how it'll be received. They don't know if then, they'll be let go because now this tool can replace everything. And so that conversation really is, do our team members have an understanding in what's happening right now? So encouraging that, structured autonomy innovation is a gap I do not see happening, but one that when you do see it happening and have those conversations, the learning of the CEO from the employee and the employees encouraged on responsible, innovative ways to really use it, that's where I see a lot more success.
Nice. So yeah, the disconnect seems to really be more of a leadership failure rather than a technology problem. So it really starts from there. There's been a lot here, very actionable as well. And as we look to wrap up, I'd love to give any founders or managers who are listening and thinking they know that they need to get better at leading their teams. Do you have any other practical changes that they could and should be making in the next 30 days?
I really do is first to pause and consider to yourself, how would my team describe me? And again, sometimes I know for founders, you are like, I don't care. I need the work to get done. I need people to be as committed as I am. But the realities of that is, unless you're a founder or unless you have such a huge, equity in the organization that people are going to be doing things 24/7, you can unintentionally be hurting your own business by not pausing to consider the humans doing the work or the things. I mean, I know, especially in startup environments, there's startups that will have, set Saturday meetings for some places 12 to 2. That's an example of one that I knew to be true. And then at different times, and just some of those practices that you say, well, if someone doesn't want to do this, they're not committed. But also understanding there are so many people that they want to come, they want to do great work, they have so much to bring to your company. They also have a life outside of it. So how do you make sure that the work they're doing isn't just a quick burn and flame, but also making it sustainable? And so some of it is really thinking about that as you can perceive it, because you can probably have a sense, okay, if I'm really to put myself in the position of my team members, is what they may say. But then having those conversations, and I literally say, if it feels awkward to start having these, and it probably will be if you have conversations like this without explaining why you're having it now. But saying, okay, so I've been listening to podcasts, or I've been really trying to think about intentional development. I want your work. You have a lot to do. We have really ambitious goals. I also want it to be sustainable. What does that look like from your perspective? Because I want to hear it from you, and we can have that conversation. Some things I may be on board with, some things we may not be able to do, but I want to have the conversation so you always know where things stand and feel like you were treated fairly. I mean, that 30 seconds of conversation can be the difference between some of your best employees deciding to stay with you and telling other people to come work there.
Ashley, this has been incredible. I appreciate all your insights. If people want to check out Manager Method and your new book, where should they go?
You can go to managermethod.com. That's the kind of home you can get to things. The book is The Manager Method. So you can get that in hardcover, digital, or audiobook. I did read the book. And we have a book club guide that a number of, especially tech companies, are using as like internal book club guides. And we have a whole leadership development platform at Manager Method.
Awesome. We'll link everything in the show notes before. Ashley, thank you again. And thank you, everybody, for listening to Category Leaders.
Thanks, Eli.
Thanks for listening to Category Leaders. If you are a B2B founder, executive, or leader with a story worth sharing, I'd love to have you on the show. Head to categoryleaders.team-maia.com to apply. Found value in this episode? Here's how you can help. Share it, take a screenshot, post it on LinkedIn, or send it to someone who needs to hear this. And if you know a leader who should be featured, tag them. I'd love to connect. Please subscribe to Category Leaders so you don't miss the next conversation. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn or visit team-maia.com to learn more about what we do. Thanks for being here. See you on the next episode.